Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
This episode, Donald and I have had kind of a lot of stuff going on in our respective lives, so we weren't able to really come up with a topic yet, so we always figured let's go to the old grab bag and kind of see what comes up to the surface. So the way we're going to start this episode is I'm going to pitch to you, Donald, and I'm going to ask you kind of your take on two major events that have happened in very recently. One was the solar eclipse and the other one, the lunar eclipse. Actually, the lunar eclipse is occurring as we record this right now. Of course, when everybody hears this, it'll be a little while ago. So why don't you tell me your take on the energies that are associated with the eclipses and what, if you put any significance in it.
Yeah. Well, I think I mentioned in a previous episode that I don't consciously notice much of the energies with sun when it has like mass ejections or solar flares or anything like that. So I didn't know that there was a solar eclipse until about a moment ago when you said there was a solar eclipse. I'm like, really? Okay, cool.
Oh, you didn't hear about the one that was, I think it was on the, it was in the middle of November. I don't remember. I'll have to look it up. But yeah, there was a very recent solar eclipse.
Within the past 4 weeks?
Yeah, it was pretty recent. In fact, we're not going to see another total solar eclipse until 2016. I want to say it was like November 14th or something like that. I'll double check the date on that. But yeah, it was in Australia. You could see the total eclipse. But I want to say that you said that you don't notice any effects from it, but that doesn't mean that they don't have any effects if you don't notice.
Oh, yeah. So I want to be very clear here. I don't notice any conscious, I don't consciously notice effects with it where I make the connection between, oh, solar eclipse and something is happening here. To me, it's just like, oh, something's happening here. Oh, okay, here we go. It's making that connection between the two.
Okay.
So with a lunar eclipse, though, I noticed that much more.
Oh, by the way, it was, I believe it was November 13th.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, that was right before my birthday.
That was right before your birthday, yeah.
Oh, okay. Now I'm thinking back. Okay, what was going on right before my birthday? That was only a few weeks ago. Yeah, I don't really remember a whole lot of anything significantly different than being tuned into energies or the effects, being consciously aware of the solar eclipse going on. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I'm able to really say a whole lot about that specifically. I have noticed that it seems to me that a lot of people that do not have a strong spiritual foundation in one way or another, I'm noticing that there seems to be more and more, I don't know how the best way to describe it, is more of a confusion, more of a kind of off the rocker, unbalanced, if that makes more sense, where they're having more difficulty focusing. They're jumping off more off of their primal instincts instead of more of the higher brain functions. And that's something I've noticed. I don't know if you've noticed it or if our
Now, are you talking about an association with the eclipses or just generally?
I'm seeing if there's a connection between the two.
Oh, I see. I think there could be. If you look at it astrologically, the sun and the moon are in conjunction.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't be even any more in conjunction than they are when they're in either a solar or a lunar eclipse. It's just a matter of which one happens to be what is in between what.
Mm-hmm.
So during the solar, the moon's in between us and the sun. During the lunar, we're in between the moon and the sun.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that there's effects. And I think that the solar eclipses have a different effect than the lunar eclipses. They're strong. And of course, you know, the doubters and the haters are going to say, well, did you feel it because you knew there was an eclipse? But I've kind of looked retroactively in the past and said, mm-hmm. and noticed that on a week I felt really wonky that there happened to be an eclipse, a solar eclipse. This last one on the 13th, after the solar eclipse, I felt this that what I call the energy glut, where I have all this energy in myself and I don't know what to do and how to release it.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I ended up with a cold.
Oh no,
a significant cold. It actually passed pretty unremarkably. And that weekend, in fact, I just pretty much stayed laid up and didn't really do anything. But I sprung back from it really quick. So I don't know why the solar energies tend to be more profound to me than the lunar, even though I do pay attention to the lunar energies.
So. And see, I'm almost exactly the opposite, but I don't pay attention to the solar energies. But lunar eclipses, yeah.
Well, you're a water sign, so that makes sense.
I'm not only a water sign, I'm a very big water sign, Scorpio.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very pleased with that, if you couldn't tell.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Scorpio is one of those signs that's considered, you know, not just a water sign, but one of the deep, deep water signs. So, yeah, with the lunar stuff, going back for just a moment, I've basically set up for the past couple years where if there's information that I'm interested in or that I should hear about, then I will hear it through my social networks or through hang around people or whatever. And I think the solar eclipse that happened a few weeks ago that you're talking about, I think the only person I heard that from was you. I didn't even realize that was going on, and so my focus just wasn't even, I wasn't even able to tune into it or even think about it much. With the lunar eclipse, though, I've been hearing about this lunar eclipse for probably the past week and a half. I'm also very, always very aware of the cycles of the moon. And I can feel a very strong difference between, you know, a waxing moon and a waning moon and a new moon and a full moon. Kind of like what you were talking about when you say, oh, you know, you think about retroactively what was going on and how it was affecting you. Well, I actually have something go on, something happens, I'm like, this feels interesting, this feels different. And then I'll be outside walking and I'm like, oh, it's a new moon, that's why, that makes sense. Or it's a full moon, or if it's a third quarter moon or first quarter moon, whatever. And it's just like, yeah. So if there's anything going on with the sun, unless I hear about it from somewhere else or on the news, or you know, somebody mentions it on Facebook or something like that, I just don't know about it.
What do you think the sun is?
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace. Thank you, they might be giants.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist that.
Yeah, the sun is hot. The sun is hot. I know that tune. I don't think I have it, but I know it. But, you know, I was reading this morning this article. I'll have to post it. I don't remember what it was called, but I'll call it The Fall of Science.
Okay.
And they were talking about how there was a scientist that said, if we understand the sun, we understand the universe.
Mm.
And the person was like, well, that's all well and good, but you don't sound like you understand the sun. And they're just saying, you know, kind of like what you were just saying about the sun. It's a really clinical, it's a pretty cut and dry description of the sun. It'd be like saying, what's a human? And trying to use a cut and dry description of it. I think the sun is this massive type of consciousness, or gestalt consciousness or whatever, that is so implicitly tied to our own consciousness. We have no idea. We just have no idea. And I think when we see these eclipses happen, both solar and lunar, there is something going on with a shift in consciousness, and it's usually pretty subtle to where we don't know that it's happening, you know.
Is it kind of like getting a bruise?
Getting a bruise? How do you mean?
Because with an eclipse, from our perspective, one thing is in front of the other. Either the sun is in front of the, or either we're between the sun and the moon, or the moon is between us and the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And if the moon and the sun and us all have this very, you know, innate, strong connection consciousness with one another, then if something happens in between there, it's kind of like almost getting a bruise on our body. It's kind of like, because, you know, a bruise is there and we feel it, but at this, and we notice it, but it's not overwhelmingly like, you know, jumping off a cliff or something like that. It's just very noticeable. It's like, oh, how'd we get that? Oh yeah, we lost our balance or something and ran into the wall the other day, or mm-hmm. you know, we didn't quite negotiate the distance between going through this place here and this place here, and or we were out on the playground and some kids were playing, throwing a ball around and they hit it and it hit us in the arm or something like that.
So you're saying the bruise is like a, you're saying it's because it's a little more subtle, it's below the surface, and
yeah.
it's not so overt as a slice through your arm or something like that?
Exactly, but it's still very noticeable, kind of like with the solar eclipses and the lunar eclipses, depending on who you are and, you know, your makeup, you feel the solar eclipses more than I do, and I feel the lunar eclipses more than you do, or from if I understand what we're talking about earlier. It's kind of like maybe we get a little bruise there, a little muscle soreness or something like that. It's like something that we notice, that we absolutely notice, but at the same time, it's not. It doesn't completely throw us out, you know, off our rocker, as it were.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's more just of a blend of the energies and how they cooperate together. The sun has an energy, and I think because of my energetic signature, I'm sensitive to sun stuff, and your energetic signature, you're sensitive to moon stuff, which is kind of odd because my rising is a Cancer, which is a moon sign, so you figured. But, you know, we can get real crazy complicated if we want, but why?
You're a Gemini, right? Your sun sign is Gemini?
Yeah, and so am I. Have I used that joke already?
Yes, you have, but it's such a...
Well, sorry. I'm sorry, listeners. I'm sorry for recycling the joke.
No. Don't apologize. That's
I blame the other guy, which is the other me, so...
That's one of the thing is you come back with it so quickly. I just love it because it's like, you're Gemini, right? And like, yeah, and so am I. I'm like, oh, that's like perfect. Mm-hmm. I'm nonchalant. So you can use it as many times as you want. It makes
well, I can, but the listeners are going to go, and so am I, in unison with me. And they're going to, okay.
Yeah. So, and that's such a bad thing?
Well, I don't know. I don't have a studio audience to do it, so it kind of loses its effect. You know, it's like, you know, the kiss on, you know, the 80s interracial kiss, ooh, kind of thing, you know.
You know, we have editing software. We can actually take the audio and put an audience in there.
We can, but we're not going to do that.
Right. We're not going to do that. Not going to do that. Not even once. Okay, I'll let that go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming you've watched TV shows that have the canned laughter and all that other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And you just, a part of me dies inside every time I hear a Gilligan's Island chuckle in the background. So,
exactly.
Nonetheless, we were talking about the consciousness of the sun and the moon.
Sorry about
we
that.
We went from Gilligan's Island to the energetic consciousness of the sun and the moon.
Actually, we went from the sun and the energetic consciousness of the sun and the moon to Gilligan's Island and then back again.
Now we have to get back because I don't want to get stuck on Gilligan's Island. I mean,
and it was just a three-hour tour.
Yeah. So the I that's the way I look at it. It's like I look at it as kind of like when you have two flavors of foods, but then when they combine, or I guess more like two chemicals. You have a chemical that kind of has a characteristic of its own, and then another chemical molecule, whatever. Then you combine, and you get something completely its own energy, that it's its own distinct thing, but it's due to the fact that, I mean, oxygen is this, you know, this highly flammable thing, and hydrogen's this really light gas, and yet you combine them in a certain way and you get water, which is the basic element of everything on this planet for all intents and purposes, life on this planet. So it's interesting that each of those have their own independent, and like sun has its own energy and a moon has its own energy, but then when you combine them in an eclipse, it creates a complete energy of the combining of those two, and I think that's what has a profound effect on us. I think it's because I believe that the sun has a consciousness and the moon. Well, I don't know if the moon has a consciousness, but the moon it's something to do with our consciousness that's very profound. It's a symbolic that's much greater than we even can understand.
So you think the sun definitely has consciousness, but you're not too sure about the moon. I'm curious, why not?
Well, I think the moon does have a consciousness, but it is a different it ties to our inherent consciousness very in a very different way than the sun does. The moon, I think, is more unique to our the Earth vibration, mm-hmm. where the sun is a very, you know, it's a solar system vibration. It's a vibration that all the planets respond to in one way or another, you see?
Kind of like the sun is the seat of like a city government, like where the mayor and the city council and everything. And then everybody in this in their own houses and their own businesses and everything are kind of like the on the outer are more like the moon and the earth and us, where we don't have an necessarily a direct input in there unless we want to. Every single meeting, you know, the whole city is not at every city meeting. You know, thousands of people doing their own, you know, putting in their own, hey, I feel like we should do this, I feel like we should do that, ah, da, da, da. But at the same time, the measures and stuff that come out of a city meeting affect the people in the that work and live in that one in municipality.
Right.
Is that kind of what you're looking at, where the kind of like the sun is the seat of government, the center of how things get done in a city, whereas the moon is more of a passive thing where it's just like, oh, look, the weather has affected this road right here, and now there's a big pothole. You know, we should have somebody come out and fix this.
Yeah, I think there's a degree of that. I think so. But I think that if we look at it, if we drill it down a little bit more, and we talk about everything is made up of light, and our source of light is the sun, correct?
Uh-huh.
I think it's interesting that there were ancient cultures that worshipped the sun. They considered a sun a god. Mm-hmm. And I believe that the sun is, in essence, a very, very grand consciousness. I do believe so. And I believe that the light that the sun emits combines and comprises and creates us and all the life on this planet. And so that consciousness of the sun is loaned or given or bestowed upon our own consciousness. So it's like we're pieces of that consciousness that the sun is.
So what gives the sun its light?
I don't think the sun is given its light. It is light. It's not bestowed upon it. It just is. It's a self-creating light is what it is. And the source is from something that's just so out there I can't even begin to.
That was kind of a loaded question, because I could easily springboard from that off to, well, what gives us our life? You know, what is the spark that, you know, makes it that we can say, you know, that we were talking about a few episodes ago, of, you know, what is life? What is consciousness? How do we know when somebody or something is alive and how something or something is not alive? And I was kind of moving it in there. Is like, okay, so if we're talking in a spiritual sense, if you're saying that the sun makes its own light, then we would also make our own light. Or do we get our own light, our own spark of life, our spark of consciousness from the consciousness of the sun?
Ah, I see where you're going with that. That's a really interesting question. And the problem is we're going into duality and we're going into time constructs. So I think it's a chicken and an egg game. So, okay.
you walked into that one. I had to call you on it.
I like it. I like it. It's a good brain stretcher. I don't know if the sun is a giver or a creator of life. I wonder if there is an aspect of our consciousness that actually feeds the sun itself.
And this is what I'm talking about. Where does the sun get its light? Or, and as you say, if it makes its own light, then
no, I'm. If I said makes its own life, I stand corrected.
Okay.
I would rather say that it is its own light.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'd rather say.
Gotcha. Kind of like a candle.
Yes, like a candle. A candle doesn't make light. A candle, the flame of a candle is its light. It doesn't make its light. You know, it's one and the same. You can say the light comes from the candle, but that's thinking too three-dimensionally in a way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and also, I like the analogy with the candle, because one of the ideas with that is that the candle can share its light with not losing anything of itself. In other words, you can have one candle that's lit, and you can take one candle that's not lit. You can light the unlit candle with the one that is lit. Both candles are then lit, but yet the first candle has not lost anything.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And are you kind of looking at it kind of like that, where the sun is able to share its candlelight with us, with consciousness, or we share our consciousness with the sun? Let me rephrase that. Us as candles share our light with the sun, sun's consciousness, or the candle of the sun shares its light with us, or are we all just a huge, big ball of consciousness that we're all just kind of like, we're in this whole circulatory system of the universe where it's just like, okay, I'm the lymph node of the solar system and this part of the solar system, and the sun is, you know, I don't know, let's say the left hemisphere of the brain, something like that. I don't know. I'm starting to lose my analogy there.
No, well, it's because we have to stretch our minds to try to stay with it. It's in order to preserve the analogy, we have to think three-dimensionally. Once we start to expand beyond three-dimensionally, then analogies are going to suffer as far as trying to make them work, unfortunately. I think it's too intertwined. I mean, I guess what I would say is that when a particle of light or an electron or whatever you want to say, when something you observe, when it hits your eye,
like a big pizza pie,
like a big pizza pie,
that's amore.
It's or something like amore. That's amore eel. So
electrifying, isn't it?
No, they're not electric.
Oh yeah, I was thinking electric eel and just substitute the two. Anyway, going on.
It's a distant cousin.
I interrupted you. I apologize.
No, that's okay. It was somewhat irresistible. I'm imagining. We are talking about the moon, so I guess I'm going to give you license on that. So when the light of the moon, and actually that you just reminded me of that little joke of yours. That just reminded me of what I was going to talk about.
Oh, cool.
On this whole subject. So, when a particle, an electron, or whatever it is, when light hits your eye, when is it no longer light? You see what I'm saying?
Oh.
I don't think light ever is not light. It just is. So that's why I say that the sun is its own light. It doesn't make its own light. It is its own light. So whatever creates life, which is to me just consciousness expressing itself extremely vibrantly in this dimension, is that we perceive as light. That's what I think the sun is, and I think we are all that as well. It's like sunlight kind of taking different forms. It's like, what did I see? I saw something the other day that said, cause and effect is not something making something else happening. It's just something happening, changing form.
Okay.
So, in other words, cause and effect is just basically, here it is in one version, and here it is in another version. So, it's kind of that idea to me.
Kind of like changing costumes for Halloween, like, I'm Superman, I'm Batman, I'm a Twinkie. Oh, no more Twinkies.
No more Twinkies. And yeah, I think that happened just in time for 2012. That I think, you know, if there's a shift, a vibrational shift, we shifted out of Twinkies. So that, it makes the optimist in me come alive. There is hope for humanity when Twinkies die.
Not a fan of Twinkies or Hostess, I take it.
Well, I know. I don't know what they are. If you told me what they were, I wouldn't know.
See, I saw a thing just recently where they were talking about the ingredients that are in a Twinkie, and they were saying there's 37 ingredients that make up a Twinkie, and some of those things are used in other things like hair gel and rocket fuel and stuff like that. And I'm like, cool. So if you eat a Twinkie, it's almost like you're eating part of a thing that can also be used in rockets. There's part of there's the health conscious part of me that says, well, that doesn't sound very healthy. And then there's the kid part of me like, I'm eating rockets. I know it's terrible.
You're eating rocket fuel is what you're eating, which makes you highly combustible and volatile. And
that's where all the people that self-combust.
That's, oh, spontaneous combustion.
That's where I was looking.
Excessive Twinkie consumption?
Exactly. Excessive Twinkie consumption causes spontaneous combustion. And that's why they could never find any of the causes of it, because it was all in a Twinkie. And if you've ever seen rocket fuel, rocket fuel takes care of everything.
Oh, my.
So if you want to go from that with the Twinkies being a good thing, then we're no longer spontaneously combusting ourselves with sweet, sweet delicacies.
Oh, my. Well, you know, I'm... Knowing that there's however many chemicals in there, I just miss them less and less. I just think they... I was like, don't let the door hit you on the way out, Twinkie.
Well, to be honest with you, I'm one of those people who occasionally like sweets, but I have a huge problem actually eating much sweets at all. When I was a kid going trick-or-treating, I'd get a bag of candy and I'd eat maybe a few pieces that night, a few pieces the next day, and then I was done. But the thing is, it's kind of interesting with Twinkies and a lot of the Hostess stuff. When I would have them, I would take a bite and I'm like, yeah, this is too sweet. There's something off here. It's good, I like it, but it's just off. Now that the concept of Twinkies has been brought up and we're talking about it as, you know, Hostess being gone, I find it interesting that I had not made that connection consciously before. It's just like, yeah, Twinkies, I don't really a fan of them. But I think that the consciousness of... Okay, that was bad. I was trying to segue back into
trying to
the
segue
topic.
Back in it. You know, I could take the long way back. I mean, we would have to hijack the topic a little bit if we wanted to take this Twinkie topic and really kind of... Okay, let's do this. Let's do this. We're talking about... The sun is a gestalt consciousness, and if we're saying that light is a part of everything and is a part of all consciousness and everything's interconnected, there's a resonance to things, right?
Oh, sure.
Now,
yeah.
Let's talk about, and you and I talk about how we each had we have a particular energetic vibration that responds to the sun or that responds to the moon, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's foods that have energetic resonance and vibration.
Oh.
And there are things that we eat that we just don't like. There's three foods that I've not ever liked to my memory in one form or another. And you wonder, why is it you don't like that food? I just don't like it. But there is a dissonance between you and the flavor. Is that because there's an energetic signature that just doesn't match up? And I'm not talking about an allergy. I'm talking about just a dislike for something.
Yeah, like broccoli.
Oh, I love broccoli.
Oh,
you don't like it?
Oh,
huh?
No.
Oh.
No, not. It was very interesting because a few years ago, I was dating this woman and she did not like my diet. She did not like how I ate. And she's like, you need to eat healthier. You need to eat more vegetables. I'm like, I don't do vegetables. And then the show that I was watching was Nova Science Now with Neil deGrasse Tyson. And they had this little piece on there where it is a genetic marker that allows you to either enjoy the taste of vegetables or to be totally turned off by them. And I actually showed her that, I think it was a 13-minute piece, and she never bothered me about eating vegetables ever again. So I was surprised that being able to stomach vegetables was... a genetic marker, kind of like what you're saying, kind of like the makeup of who you are, your biology, is an energetic block that sometimes doesn't fit with other energetic blocks such as food or places or people.
Ah, interesting.
Or people.
Yeah. Yeah, or people. That makes sense. I think we've talked a little bit about that before, but I just don't remember what episode.
We're getting to the point now where we've done so many episodes where it's just like, yeah, and in many of the episodes we go on many tangents.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah, we've talked about that before, but maybe episode 3, 8, 9, 32, and 46.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You can take little pieces from bits and pieces of it. I don't want to get too, you know, position taking, but do you have any thoughts on genetically modified organisms on a level, on more of a consciousness level or a vibrational level or any of that?
I really have to say I would be going on what I've heard. I don't look much into that area. From what I've read and what I've little bit that I've understand of it, GMO is probably not the best thing in the world. At the same time, there's something that where I see people need to eat, and if you're starving and you're hungry and you are on a limited income or no income whatsoever, if you're offered, you know, a GMO fruit or vegetable as opposed to one that isn't, I think you're going to be happy that you have something to eat. Mm-hmm. And you could say that about
Hostess Ho-Hos, though.
Exactly.
You could say that about anything that is digestible.
Exactly. And so I think that if you're asking me if I are making a
I'm not talking about on a political level. We're not a political show, and I don't want to be a political show. So, because if we were a political show, yeah, I'd be all over the board. So, and who knows, you know, and my opinion would change probably with every 6 months. So I'm going to be honest about it. I shift with the way I think because change with the changing times.
Yeah.
But we started talking about the Twinkies and we started talking about the genetic marker of food. And if we're vibrationally compatible to that particular genetic marker, there's a whole study about blood types and food.
Oh,
I don't know if you've seen that before.
Yeah.
That says if you're this kind of blood type, you're more predisposed to want certain foods, or these certain foods are better for you or not good for you. I think that's kind of an interesting thing in and of itself, but I think there's a whole vibrational aspect in foods. I believe that we choose the foods that vibrate with how we see ourselves and how we define ourselves. I think if we have an imbalance in ourselves, we will be highly attracted to foods that may cause health issues or that may compromise our energy. I believe that if we're depressed, we might be inclined to foods that give us low energy, for example.
Kind of like comfort foods.
Yeah, comfort foods. I guess you could say that. It depends on what you consider comfort food and what you consider what is the attraction for it.
You can see it a lot on American TV and movies where the character gets depressed and they are sitting on the couch watching TV, eating a whole carton of ice cream, or they have packages of potato chips. Well, at the time, Twinkies, and probably no longer.
There's always like the pint of ice cream thing.
Yeah.
The so-and-so got dumped, so now they're plowing through a pint of ice cream. Symbolically, if we talk about the whole symbology of that, or symbolism of it, doesn't that say that person feels an absence of sweetness in their lives, so that they are consuming sweet food to try to fill this void of sweetness in their life? I mean, it's usually not a sweet situation when you get dumped.
So what would you say if somebody just loves sweets? Is it always that, you know, they're always trying to fill that symbolic representation in themselves, or that symbolic vibration in themselves? Like, I don't have any sweet, or I don't feel sweet, so I need sweets. Or is it somebody that can have, you know, an absolute affinity, a love for sweets, and they're just expressing their love for sweets through eating sweets? Kind of like an artist expresses themselves through their medium, or a musician, you know, expresses themselves through their instruments, or a singer expresses themselves through their singing. Is the absence of something symbolically representative of not having it and wanting and needing to fill that void? Or could it also be the flip side of the coin where you have so much of it that you just you need to have that around you?
Well, I think it's a case by case basis. Well, yeah. I don't think it's a generalization, but it also depends on how you react to it. There are people who don't partake in something they really enjoy because they don't like the effects of it. I don't eat pork. And the reason I don't eat pork is because my body responds extremely poorly to pork, but I do like the taste of it.
Hmm.
So that's a case right in there. And then there's that leads to a question. Why is my body not resonating to pork?
Because it doesn't have enough sun.
Because it doesn't have enough sun?
Yeah, we're going back to the whole consciousness of the sun and what is the sun and where the light is. And you didn't get enough sun, so you didn't get that part of consciousness into yourself that allows yourself to have the conscious to be compatible with the consciousness of bacon. I'm stepping off the ledge here, David.
Wow, you're falling in a pit there. I'm not sure where you're going with that. Are you trying to get back to the sun? Because we can get back to the sun if you want.
No.
I think you're taking the Indiana Jones route to get to the sun, but you're with a broken leg, and I don't know what that's.
No, I'm basically saying I can fly, jumping off a cliff. Look, I'm flying. Oh, look, my ground.
Yeah, that's a heavy hallucinogen right there.
But it's a huge compatibility. Apparently, it's a compatibility with my consciousness that I can have that leap of consciousness or that hallucination of whatever.
Hmm. Wow.
Thoughts, because, you know, we're talking about foods and other people and environments that affect us and that we can relate to. What about our, you know, certain thoughts and ideas? You know, it's kind of like, I'll go back to the whole American TV and movies thing. Not everybody watches the exact same show. Because some people find, you know, you ask them, they'll be saying, well, I'm just not interested in that. And you can take just you and I. We're both Americans. There are shows that you watch that I have no interest in, and there are shows that I watch that you have no interest in. You can look at it the same thing with food as with entertainment. Is there a vibrational match? We gravitate towards the things that we're most energetically compatible with.
Well, sure. That might not be a healthy thing.
You know, healthy or schmelty.
You could say healthy schmelty, and I think I know why you say that. It's like you're saying, I almost hear you saying, well, so what if you're not healthy? That's a life choice.
I'm playing devil's advocate.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I'm allowing you to take the road of the status quo. And where I take the role of, you know, is it really that bad if I occasionally have a Twinkie, or if I occasionally have a Danish, or if I occasionally, you know, have a piece of cake? Because, I mean, this is one of those things that kind of pushes my buttons a little bit here, is because there are some people will be like, they will go to the gym 2-3 times a week. They will have a very active lifestyle. They will do what they need to do and what they feel they need to do. And then all of a sudden they'll have one piece of cake and they're like, oh no, I'm going to have to go to the gym, you know, 2 more times this week just to work off this piece of cake. And I'm sitting here going, then why did you have it? If you're going to have it, enjoy it. If you're not going to enjoy it, then don't have it.
Well, I'm looking, and that I'm okay with that. I believe everything in moderation, of course. And I'm talking about, what about the people that have 5 Twinkies a day?
Oh.
You see, and what about those people that eat primarily junk food, or their main meal are the fast food drive-thrus?
Oh.
And that's their main meal. I believe that human beings are highly adaptable. We are highly adaptable, and we obviously can eat things that our ancestors 5,000 years ago could not eat. We can. We've adapted to be able to eat these things. And even so, even between cultures, Americans go down to Mexico and cannot consume the things that the local Mexican people can eat without getting violently ill, because the people of that area have adapted to the foods and the different things and energies in that food.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so I think that there is an adaptability and a malleability. How would it change us if we consisted of nothing but fast food and there was no more natural food, you know, that wasn't bastardized, you know, 17 steps from its natural state? What would human beings become at that point?
Are you talking about pizza in a tube?
Well, you can even talk about pizza. I mean, pizza's a few steps away at that point. But or pizza in a tube, however you want to look at it. I mean, what I'm saying is that does our consciousness change with what we eat? Do we create the foods and manifest foods that are in alignment with our consciousness? It might be a chicken and egg game again, but I mean, do you think?
It's one of those interesting things where, you know, I was talking to one of my friends in the past couple weeks since our last recording, and she is very much a health person. She's very fitness oriented, very health oriented with her diets and everything like that. And she said, you know, I was driving the other day and all of a sudden I just started having these very dark thoughts. Then I backtracked and I was like, oh, I had this piece of cookie that somebody brought into work and, you know, I wasn't used to it. And so that probably affected my psychology, and it really surprised me how strongly just something like that affected me. I hear stories like this all the time where people say the energy of the food you eat affects the energy of you. And I believe to a large degree that is true, but like you said, we're very adaptable and our body is very, very good at getting what it needs and letting go of what it doesn't.
Okay, so with that, let me ask you this. And I'm not going to go, this is not an ethical thing, because it's, I'm whatever about what people choose to eat. I'm just going to choose what I want to eat. And anybody else can choose what they're eating. And that's whatever, that's fine for them. Do you believe if an animal has lived under really inhumane conditions and raised for food as a result, do you believe that A, the conditions of their life, and two, the way their life was ended, do you believe that vibration carries into the food, and do you believe that you incorporate that vibration into yourself when you eat it, or does the idea that you said where you just kind of take what you need and throw away the rest, does that apply?
I wanted to clarify that where I said the body is really good at taking what it needs and disregarding what it doesn't, meaning that, you know, it says, oh, this is something that I can use. Take it off the conveyor belt of, you know, our bloodstream after we eat. And to answer your question, it's one of those things where I think if an animal is raised for food and they are raised in unhealthy conditions that are just really unhealthy to their biology, then yes, I definitely think that there's a negative impact when you consume them. This is something that, you know, that a lot of people have looked into for years and years and years, is the actual energy of the foods we eat. And I'll tell you what, David, when I was doing the singer-songwriter stuff, I would not eat chicken, because I wanted to have my fifth chakra, my vocal cords, my communication, I wanted to have that as clear as possible. And the way that chickens are, you know, a lot of chickens are taken, are processed, is, you know, their throat is broken. And I was like, well, if I have that consciousness, if I'm ingesting that energy, then that is probably affecting my communication ability. And I was like, well, I don't even want to, if that's true, I don't even want to take the chance of having that problem right there.
Right.
At the same time, though, there's always counter vibrations to any one thing. In other words, if you eat hamburger that from animal that was raised in unsanitary, unhealthy conditions, and then processed, not in the best ways, then there's always something that you can do with that to counteract that negativity.
I don't agree.
Oh, you don't think so?
No. I mean,
not at
I think
all?
that Well, I think maybe there is a little bit of what you can do. I think you could do a little bit, but let me use this as an analogy.
We disagree on something.
Oh, we disagree on a lot of things, but this is the one that, okay, this is, I have my own issues with foods. I don't want to go into a political thing again on it, but I do believe there's a vibrational aspect to foods. And when the counter effect that you're talking about here, to me, it's analogous to saying that there's a person who was abused for years in a family situation, and they come into that family situation with that history, and then you get into a relationship with that person, and you think that that person, without those issues having been resolved through years and years and years of some kind of therapy or counseling or soul retrieval or whatever, is not going to have any, bring the effect of that into your relationship.
Oh, but
and
see,
I think it's the same case with food.
See, that's the only idea, that you're eating the same thing meal after meal, that you're having that hamburger for breakfast, lunch, and dinner day after day, week after week, because there is a difference between growing up in an abusive environment their whole life and having a week or two of abusive relationship or whatever in your life. It's going to affect your person differently, just like the food that you eat. It's going to affect you differently, and that's why they say you should eat variety. So if you're eating hamburgers, three times a day, day after day, week after week, and that is your only source of food, then yeah, I think I agree with you. There will be enormous, if possible at all, hurdles to overcome to do that counteraction. But at the same time, if you have maybe a hamburger once or twice a week, then depending on what you have the rest of the time, I think that it's very easy to have stuff that cancels out the negativity of that hamburger.
If I always say vote with your wallet. And so if you're buying hamburger that comes from beef that was raised under inhumane conditions, aren't you saying, and if you buy it twice a week, you're saying, well, it's only twice a week. I think then you're saying, I'm okay with the lesser amount of suffering of an animal in those conditions. I'm not going to go the carnivore vegetarian, because my personal belief is that vegetarian is a personal choice. I'm not going to advocate or speak against vegetarianism. It's a personal choice.
Oh, yeah.
And there's people who strongly disagree with me on that, and they're more than welcome to. And there are people who also say, you know, you don't even worry about how veal's raised. It tastes good. that's all that matters. But I can't help but think, even just a couple of days a week, that's 2 days a week of that energy. It's like the weekend alcoholic. It's like the guy who says, you know, he lives to get intoxicated to the point where he makes very, very bad decisions every single weekend. But he says, well, I'm not alcoholic because I don't drink during the week.
Ah, but see, this is where I'm talking about. There's a difference between being a complete carnivore. It's like, if I can grill it, I'm going to eat it because it just tastes good, and not paying any attention to anything else. And, you know, being over on the whole vegan side, where it's just like, I'm not going to eat anything that requires the torture or inhumane use of an animal, then there's a big difference, because I'm not in any one of those extremes. I'm more in the middle. At the same time, though, you know, I very much disagree with you, where, like what you said with the alcoholic that says, I'm not an alcoholic because I don't drink during the week. Well, you are an alcoholic because you make up for all the whole 5 days of soberness with 2 days of extreme binge drinking. And that's basically the same thing, just in a different time frame. Whereas with what we're talking about with eating the two hamburgers a week as opposed to, you know, not eating them at all, is if you're sitting there and every time you're eating those hamburgers, you're sitting there going, oh, this is so terrible how, you know, this hamburger came to be, but it tastes so good, and I feel guilty for eating it, but it's just so good. And if you're having that kind of a guilt type stuff, you shouldn't be eating hamburgers.
Well, obviously.
And the thing is, the way that you feel with how you eat your food, your body remembers that. And if you're eating stuff such as what I was talking about earlier, you know, if you're genetically, you have a genetic marker where vegetables are not good and you're being forced to eat vegetables, your body is going to have a energetic response to that, as well as a physical response, that I don't like these. This food that they're taking in right now is being marked for not available, or we're not going to use much of it right here because we just don't like it. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of a big difference right there, where the way the food is prepared, the way the food is raised, the thoughts that we have when we're eating the food, and the thoughts of people around us that may be watching us eat the food, all that put together has a vibration on the positive effect or negative effect of that food on us, on our biology, on our psychology, and on our vibration as a whole. And that's kind of like what I was saying earlier. If you eat something that you feel guilty of or about eating, you shouldn't be eating it, because it's not compatible with your energy marker that you're having right here, what you're talking about earlier.
So I guess my question would be, if a person eats food that's inhumanely raised twice a week, does the energy from that inhumane raising, if that person does not feel guilty about it, does that energy have absolutely no effect? Does the energy not carry over of how an animal was raised that you're eating, or how a food was created or processed genetically altered?
No, I'm not saying there's no effect. I'm just saying that you can amplify an effect or decrease effect with other vibrations, with other counteragents, with other things that you do. If you're extremely depressed on a regular basis and you eat food that was created in a very negative and depressed way, sure, it's probably going to have a very strong effect on your depression, and possibly even amplify it and make certain drugs less able to overtake it. At the same time, if you're a fairly happy person, feel good about your life for the most part, you know, I'm not talking about being at the extreme of everything is hunky-dory and everything is jolly, but at least have a satisfaction with your life, then probably not. I don't think those two hamburgers a week are going to really make that big of a difference.
Interesting. Well, I think it's kind of an isolatory happiness, so I would say. I would say that the person is hunky-dory, and they're saying, well, you know, I'm not really worried about how the animal lived. As long as I'm eating it, I'm happy. And it seems almost dismissive in a way. It seems almost kind of cavalier. It's like if I always wonder, how happy is a person who their happiness is irrelevant to either another person's happiness or another person's suffering? And it might extend into animals in this case. And I'll tell you this. I know for a fact, me, I'll go out to a restaurant, I'll eat a food, and I won't know what its living conditions is. And I know that. I mitigate it as much as I can, but I know that I do. I don't live my life, you know, in this little box of I only eat food that has been humanely raised. It's a personal life choice I've made. I know that there are animals. I know I've eaten food where you go to some kind of teriyaki joint on the corner and they're probably getting the best rate on the meat they can. And if they're getting the best rate on the meat they can, that means that meat was mass produced and mass raised, and the living conditions were not very optimal. Now, I realize this and I make the choice to eat it. And of course, I'm blessing the crap out of that food when I do it. But to me, it's almost like if I every single meal I eat is just been in one of those chicken, you know, those chicken factories, basically. If I'm eating food from a chicken factory and I'm blessing it all the time, it's like the blessing's not going to work anymore. I can only bless it so much. Mm-hmm. It's because then it's almost insincere. For me, it's almost like I'm saying, well, I can bless this food. I don't care how it was raised. You know what? It's like I used to say, that there is, I knew somebody and we, we were involved in a relationship, and this person would constantly apologize to me, and then they would do it again. And I'm like, well, then you're not really sorry. If you apologize and you do it again, you're not sorry. You just want me to just let you off the hook so that you could do it next time. And to me, that's what, you know, having a diet of abused food and then constantly blessing it, that's all it's doing. I mean, if and not that I'm any better if I only eat it like once a month or once every 2 weeks or once a week or whatever. It doesn't make it any better. I know that I'm still culpable, and I know that the energy is somewhere in me. I'm going to incorporate that energy. I'm just sure of it. That whatever that living condition of that animal was, I'm going to incorporate it, I'm going to take it on, and I'm going to have to figure out how I'm going to deal with it, because I think that energy passes. I don't think that – I think we can mitigate it to a great degree, which actually goes to your point.
Mm-hmm.
Your point is you can actually kind of mitigate it. However, the only way I can truly eliminate it is by completely eliminating the choice of that food. However, I just think that you can't – my personal belief is that we can't eat an animal that has really negative energy in its raising without incurring some of it. And I think even when I bless that food, I'm still going to have some residual effects in it, and I'm just going to have to figure out how I'm going to deal with it, unfortunately, and hope that it doesn't get, you know, thrust upon the people that I encounter, or that I don't, you know, do anything negative to myself as a result.
Yeah. And I agree with you that what you said, that, you know, you don't get off scot-free. There is an energy transfer there. And I agree with you completely that there is whatever kind of foods that you eat, whatever kinds of environments that you live in, whatever kind of relationships that you have, there is an energy there that that is affecting you. Well, let me use an example. If I eat a hamburger, I do not believe I'm going to fall into a deep depression for a day or two, because with the energy of the hamburger. If I now, at this point now, if I eat some chicken, I do not believe that it's going to significantly influence how well I'm able to communicate. It might have some effect, but it's not going to have a completely overwhelming effect. At the same time, I do other things that help to mitigate these type things, such as, you know, having friends, because I've mentioned in the past that I get enormous amount of satisfaction in my life from relationships with people and talking with people and hanging out with people. And that energy that my body produces, the hormones that produces from hanging around people, the endorphins that are created by involving myself with stuff and activities that I really enjoy with people I really enjoy hanging around with, does to a large degree have a stronger effect on my overall health than a hamburger I ate 2-3 days ago.
Hmm.
And that's what I'm saying is there's still – the hamburger still has an effect, but there's a stronger force, a stronger effect from everything else I do.
Okay.
And, you know, I agree with you completely. I agree with you too. You know, it's kind of like if you are that concerned about how food is processed and everything, then don't do it. You know, become a vegan or a vegetarian, or – you know, don't pretend you're being a vegan or pretending you're this person or you're being this way and then have a hamburger every Tuesday, because, you know, like what you're saying is like, oh yeah, I'm a vegan, except on Tuesdays. No, then you're not a vegan.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's true.
So, but it looks like we're getting down to the end of this episode. So what was this episode about? We went all over the place.
We did. It was a grab bag, so it kind of was at the whims of where we were going to take it. We started out with talking about the eclipses and what kind of energy they had in it as far as on us as an impact. I think this episode was kind of about what affects us on an energetic level. You know, we went as broad as the sun and the moon as the celestial bodies, and then we narrowed it down to simple food
Twinkies.
Intakes and Twinkies and stuff like that. So
we may, you know what, I think I'm not sure, but we might want to revisit this topic in the future.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I've been wanting to talk about food a little bit, and I have to be careful because I want to talk about it without soapboxing it.
Yeah.
Because I have a whole thing about food, but I also know that people need to eat different things than me because they have different biological makeups than I do. Everybody has their own makeup, and they're going to eat in accordance to that. But I honestly think that I don't know that we're all aware of the far, far, far-reaching effect that the food we eat has. I mean, I think it just reaches real far. It'd be fun to really explore that one day.
Oh, yeah. And put in the other things, such as the other parts of your life other than what you eat, but also what you do and, you know, who you associate with.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Because those are big things, too.
Oh, they're huge. All of them, they're absolutely huge.
Cool. So David and I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you've enjoyed it and that it has possibly expanded your mind, stretched a little bit, gave you a different perspective that you may not have had beforehand. If this is your first time listening, we thank you for taking time to listen to this episode. If you're a longtime listener, we love that you're still listening to us after all this time, and we hope that we are continuing to bring you something of value.
Yeah. If you're not really sure what we brought you on this episode, send us an email and say, what were you guys talking about? What is going on here? We don't care. Whatever feedback you want to give, give it to us. Best way you could give us feedback is by going to our website. There's links where you can email Donald, you can email me, or you can email us in general, Take the Red Pill Podcast. That is actually our email, or our website is actually taketheredpillpodcast.com or ttrppodcast.com. You can also type in at the end of the Facebook address, TTRP Podcast, to find our Facebook page where you can listen to all the episodes right there. And you actually post on our wall and say hi or comment on the episodes.
Yeah. You can also get all episodes for free downloaded from iTunes, correct?
You can get them from iTunes. Just go do a search under podcasts for Take the Red Pill, and you can subscribe and get them automatically downloaded every single week, or you can just handpick them as you choose.
Cool. Very cool.
You can also leave us feedback on iTunes, as a matter of fact. Yeah, tell us what you think of the show right there on iTunes.
Woohoo! So for Take the Red Pill, I am Donald Dalton, wishing your energy to be sparkly.
And I'm David Deere. Don't let any negative energies eclipse your love.